This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We continue live from T-Mobile Park. Mariners getting set for their series with the Arizona Diamondbacks. We will talk more about that in a bit, but right now we get a chance to talk to a man who will be calling the action on radio for the Colts-Seahawks matchup this weekend. Their play-by-play man, Matt Taylor, joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. Just getting excited for the game coming up this weekend. Last night's game was compelling and a good game, so I think it gets everybody even more anxious for the beginning of the season. What's the vibe like in Indianapolis? You got a new quarterback that we're wondering, all right, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? It seemed like there was sort of mixed messaging. We heard a very odd time frame in terms of recovery, 5 to 12 weeks. I've never really heard that one before, but it looks like he's going to play. So what's the vibe like out there?
Well, I think you have a lot of optimism and a lot of excitement considering, you know, in the last, I mean, it feels like around here anyways, I'm sure up there you guys have the same sentiment, but, you know, the Colts last played a game on January 9th against Buffalo. That, to me, feels like 8 years ago considering the amount of moves and transactions the Colts made this offseason, you know, just where we're at as a country in terms of all of this COVID stuff with fans back in the stands. And just excitement surrounding this team and this season upcoming with the Colts. I mean, you talk about continuity. The Colts are returning, if depending on how you classify a handful of guys on their roster on both sides of the ball. But Colts are bringing back 20 out of 22 starters this year. One of those guys that's not back, or one of those positions that's not back, is the quarterback, and that's Carson Wentz. And you're right, it was a very odd preseason and training camp for the Colts because you had two guys on consecutive days go down with injuries and a particular injury that I've never even heard of. You know, you're talking about two players in Quentin Nelson, who's an all-pro left guard, and a quarterback in Carson Wentz that had a foot injury where they have to go in and surgically remove a piece of bone from the foot that gave them trouble. And both guys are in the front end of that window where they're going to be back in 5 weeks back on the field. And so it's a pretty impressive feat having had both guys had surgery, you know, on August 2nd and August 3rd, respectively. And here they are available to go in week one. So it's a pretty cool thing. And, you know, the Colts have had their bout with COVID, guys on the list. They've had close contacts because of non-vaccinated players. So they've had a lot of drama in the first 5-6 weeks of the season, and they haven't even played a game yet. But that being said, they're pretty well intact and pretty healthy going into the start of the regular season, where, again, optimism is high, and right out of the gate they have to play a really good football team in Seattle that was 12-4 last year.
Well, Matt, it's very interesting. I'm glad you explained that foot injury because, you know, it's very uncommon, and that explains the 5 to 12 week deal, you know, the range. Like, we just don't see that. And so we were thinking, geez, this could be either fairly minor or really bad. But as far as, yeah, two of your better players, what about the chemistry as far as, you know, Frank Reich and Carson Wentz? They're trying to recapture that, it seems. It's always tough going away from a 4,000-yard passer and Phillip Rivers, but as far as the chemistry between those two guys, does it feel like they're going to be able to capture that same magic they had in Philly?
You know, that's the plan, and I think that they can. There's good potential that they can do that. But obviously, with what I just talked about, you know, Wentz missed a lot of time. You know, there was 19-plus practices at their training camp. He only participated in two of those. And then, you know, he didn't play in any preseason games, came back last week, but unfortunately, just as he got healthier, was able to kind of take that next step in terms of his rehab, get back on the field and do some 11-on-11 work against the Colts starting defense, he lands on the COVID list and was a close contact guy, had to miss 5 days with out of practice. And so that was, you know, a little bit more unsettling. And so came back late last week and got one practice in before Labor Day weekend. And then this week he had 3 full days of full contact, or not, you know, not full contact, but, you know, going up and against the defense, doing 11-on-11 work, getting ready for Seattle. So I think when it's all said and done, he's only got 7 practices under his belt. And so It's less than ideal, but I think that connection that you bring up with Frank Reich is going to help expedite things a little bit, where they're trying to rekindle that magic from 2017 when they were both in Philadelphia. Reich as his offensive coordinator that year. Wentz was a 33-7 guy, right? 33 touchdowns, 7 picks.
Yeah.
And had it not been for an ACL tear, he's probably looking at, in likelihood, the MVP of the league that season. So the potential is there. That's why the Colts made this move. You know, for the second year in a row, they're bringing in a quarterback that has had, spent time with Frank Reich in a prior stop in their NFL journeys. And they know what Frank Reich can do to bring the best out of quarterbacks. So they're trying to tap into that resource. And also, it's a guy that's 28 years old, still has a relatively cheap contract as it relates to NFL quarterbacks. And a lot of upside, and they're just trying to get the best out of the player that has performed very, very well before in the past in the NFL.
I'm sure, like us, you guys go through the roster and you look at the position groups and go, man, this is an area of strength. And then this group over here, whoa, I got a lot of questions about that. For Seattle, we look at the safeties and go, it's hard to find a better tandem than Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. But we look at the cornerbacks and go, man, I don't know how I feel about Trey Flowers and DJ Reed. Is he going to stay healthy? So keeping that in mind, when you look at the Colts roster, what are the position groups you look at as an absolute strength and maybe a group that you look at and go, man, I'm not sure what we're going to see out of that group?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And certainly we do the same thing here in Indianapolis. And this is going to sound like a really homer take, but I promise you it's coming from a place of objectivity. You know, I just don't think the Colts have a lot of liabilities. And that speaks to how well they've drafted the last couple of years since Chris Ballard's been here. Now, certainly, you know, they're deeper and stronger at some spots than others. But to your point, they don't have that, you know, spot on the roster where you say, oh, man, that could get them beat this particular game. But as it relates to Sunday, injuries always test your depth. And right out of the gate, the Colts are not going to have their starting cornerback in Xavier Rhodes, who last year had a very, very good season. He was not a Pro Bowler or first-team All-Pro or anything like that, but he played like one. The numbers kind of bear that out, where he gave up only 51% completion percentage, and he was really close to a shutdown corner. So not having him out there in week one is a really big deal to this Colts secondary when you have to contend with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So it's next men up, and those men are TJ Carey and Rock Ya-Sin. Rock Ya-Sin's heading into his third season at a Temple, and it's been up and down. It's been filled with a little, there's been some speed bumps along the way for him. He's dealt with penalties. He's dealt with inconsistency. He's given up a high percentage of passes thrown his way in 2 years. He was banged up a little bit last year, which didn't help his playing time. But he's going to be thrown into the fire trying to slow down one of the game's premier wide receivers, especially a big guy like DK Metcalf that is so good at explosive plays that can line him up by himself in the boundary. And then basically it's one-on-one between Metcalf and Rock Ya-Sin, and he's got to win some of those matchups and prevent some big plays from Seattle in order for the Colts to have a chance to win. But on paper, top to bottom, the Colts are a well-built team, and they just, they're going to rely on their depth, but they don't have the part of their roster that I think you circle and say, yeah, but this could be a real problem Sunday, you know, Sunday in and Sunday out.
Matt, I gotta believe that Darius Leonard has got to just be one of the most loved players. And I'm looking at this guy, second round draft choice. He was rookie of the year. And you look at his numbers, man. I mean, he's started 42 games. The guy has knocked down 22 passes in 3 years, 9 forced fumbles, 15 sacks. I mean, this guy he's got to be the superstar of that defense. I mean, you got some great players on the defense, but man, I just watching him on film and seeing all pro every year. This guy is just, what a great find by Indianapolis drafting this guy in the second round.
Yeah. I mean, he's an FCS guy coming out of South Carolina State.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people after that 2018 draft, you know, we fall into the trap of giving out draft grades right away, right? As soon as the draft is over and guys haven't even played it down yet, we have to give out our grades. And, you know, somebody called Darius Leonard the worst draft pick of that 2018 class. And he's the type of guy that doesn't run away from that kind of stuff. You know, he searches out what people are saying about him, what they're writing about him. And you can bet your bottom dollar that article, that headline is still hanging up in his locker, right? I mean, he gets fueled by that kind of stuff. And you're right. I mean, a second-round draft pick coming out of South Carolina State, a lot of people question the pick, and all he's done is turn into an all-pro player, pro bowler, two out of the last 3 years, and he is, without question, the lifeblood of the Colts defense. He's one of the biggest leaders on the team. When he's out there, they just play at a higher level. You know, I mean, some guys you put into those buckets of they're just different. The entire unit is different when he's on the field and his presence is felt, and Darius Leonard certainly provides that kind of juice for the Colts. And so, you know, if you look at their linebackers, you know, Bobby Okereke, he's a third-year player out of Stanford. He's going to kind of step into that Mike linebacker role. They lost Anthony Walker in free agency. Just couldn't keep everybody that they had in their draft class or their free agency class last year. They lost him to the Browns, and I thought he was a very underrated player in terms of, you know, stuffing the run on first and second down. He's a very physical linebacker. Not that Darius Leonard and Bobby Okereke aren't, but their strengths are in coverage. They're fast, rangy players. They can cover sideline to sideline. But I'll be interested in week one without Anthony Walker on this roster to see how well the Colts do slowing down the run. Chris Carson, Rashad Pitty, and keeping, obviously, Russell Wilson in the pocket and tracking him down in space. You know, I'll be interested to see how the Colts do against the run without having their main run stuffer on the ball club any longer as he left in free agency.
Voice of the Indianapolis Colts, Matt Taylor, is our guest here on 710 ESPN Seattle for a few more moments. And, Matt, I know it's probably odd you don't get a lot of questions about an offensive guard, but there's a guy out there playing that's very familiar out here, and that's Mark Glowinski. And I know my partner here is very, you know, sort of bummed that he's out there. He left Seattle and just a guy he liked. How has he played out there with that O-line? Is he a guy that's been sort of a rock, maybe not a superstar, but just a guy that can be relied upon? Because that was kind of his perception. That was the perception of him out here.
No, I think you nailed it. The perception that we have on Mark Glowinski here in Indianapolis, he's just a pro's pro. I mean, he's a guy that just answers the bell. In fact, he hasn't missed a start since 2018. He's the only offensive lineman that the Colts have been able to depend on full-time in that time span. And he is a guy that as soon as he had that great season in 2018 at right guard, the Colts inked him. They gave him that contract extension because they really recognize his value. And the Colts offensive line has been one of the best collective units in the NFL since 2018 when Frank Reich took over. You know, they are, I think, third in the NFL and fewest sacks allowed in that time frame. And that's because they've invested a lot of resources up front. You know, you got a first-round pick in Ryan Kelly, a first-round pick in Quentin Nelson. Eric Fisher, obviously, was a first-round pick way back in the day in 2013 by the Chiefs. And then you have a second-round pick in their right tackle in Braden Smith. And whenever you talk about the offensive line around here, everybody goes to those first four guys. But then people start to catch themselves and they say, oh, yeah, and Mark Glowinski is just solid as can be playing his right guard position. He's an unheralded guy. He's unassuming. He just puts his head down. And, again, I think the biggest compliment you can give somebody like that is they are just a pro's pro. They handle their business. They're not looking for all the glory. They're just out there doing their job. And Mark Glowinski, for all of those reasons, is probably one of my favorite players on this Colts roster.
Yeah, I remember one time I asked him, you know, the 225-pound bench rep thing. I'm like, how many times can you do it, Mark? He's like, till I get bored. So, yeah, the dude, like, he bench presses 550 pounds. I mean, just quiet, great guy. Just, yeah, he's one of the few guys that we let go that you regret.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen him lately. Yeah, I don't know if you've seen him lately, but he's rocking. His beard is something fierce now. I mean, it rivals ZZ Top. I mean, you can get lost in that thing.
We'll look for that.
It is intense. It's really solid.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, I wanted to ask you about a guy who maybe is, you know, a sleeper, somebody that, and I don't want to, you know, direct you one way or the other. I was looking at Grover Stewart today. That guy is hard to move on the inside. He's a nose tackle guy. You know, maybe he's a candidate, maybe not. But who on this team is maybe a couple of names of guys that that maybe aren't, you know, household words that are really good, solid players?
Sure. No, I think you start there with Grover Stewart. I mean, he is a, you know, 2017 fifth-round draft pick out of the Division II school in Albany State. Okay, so his path to the NFL was pretty unlikely, and then his ability to stick in the NFL, I think, was even unlikelier, and yet here he is. And he's another guy that got a contract extension not too long ago from Chris Ballard. And I think between he and DeForest Buckner, man, I don't know if there's a better duo, defensive tackle duo, nose tackle, and defensive tackle in the NFL than those two guys, with the amount of pressures that they force, kind of pushing the pocket back into quarterbacks. That's so big with how the Colts want to play their 4-3 defense. Other sleepers, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily a sleeper in that, you know, how can a first-round draft pick be a sleeper? But I think Kwity Paye is in store for a bigger year than some people have pegged for him, being an edge rusher, 21st overall out of Michigan. You know, I think at least people around here are readjusting their expectations for him because he's looked that good right out of the gate in training camp in the preseason. So he's a guy to follow. He'll be wearing number 51 out there on Sunday. And then you guys talked about your safety duos there with Adams and Diggs. And that certainly is a great tandem. Both guys made the Pro Bowl last year. But here in Indianapolis, the guys they have aren't too shabby either. They've got Kari Willis and Julian Blackman, and they're young players. Blackman's heading into year two, Willis in year three, and they just play off each other very, very well. The Colts are expecting some big things in the back end from those guys. And quite frankly, they need big play from their secondary this year because, you know, the one caveat in the Colts defense the last couple of seasons, they've been good. They've been a top 10 defense the last couple of years. But if you want to nitpick on them a little bit, they've given up a lot of big plays and they've given up big games to above average quarterbacks. And that's certainly what Russell Wilson is coming up on Sunday. Whenever they play above average quarterbacks in years past, like Deshaun Watson a couple of times, Derek Carr, Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, the Colts in those games are routinely giving up 300 yards per game. They feasted on some bad quarterbacks. Now it's time to prove it against the elite guys. Again, Wilson is just that. So are the Seattle Seahawks, 12-4 last year. The Colts need to start winning some football games against bona fide competition to back up where they want to go.
Hey, Matt, let me ask you about another guy that people out here are very familiar with, and it looked like potentially he would be opening the season at quarterback because, you know, the uncertainty around Carson, Ellinger gets hurt.
Yeah.
Jacob Eason is a guy on the roster who's, you know, loaded with ability, really raw, but what was the feeling about, oh, man, Eason may start the season for this team? What's the perception of him out there?
Well, it's pretty good, and I thought he grew a ton in training camp because he was thrusted into that role of starting quarterback right out of the gate, again, day two or three of training camp. And last year was the closest thing you're going to get for an NFL player to a redshirt year, right? Because there was no preseason games. You had a truncated training camp. I mean, I think the Indianapolis Star and, you know, their beat writers tracked it. I think he had 36 pass attempts in training camp last year as the third-string cornerback behind Jacoby Brissett and Phillip Rivers. I mean, that's nothing, right? That's no experience, and it's not anybody's fault. It's just the unfortunate circumstances of the NFL last year. He got virtually no run in practice once the regular season started, and so I thought this year having him get some actual time against a live defense and being able to kind of put all of that mental work that he got last year in film study to good use on the field was really, really big for him. And you just saw it. I mean, in training camp, his body language, his development, his comfortability factor, I mean, you could just see it growing day by day and week by week. In fact, he had a really good showing this year in those three preseason games and played well enough to the point where the Colts felt comfortable leaving him on the roster as the backup quarterback behind Carson Wentz and not going out there and, you know, getting a veteran quarterback to be, you know, in the wings, so to speak, if Carson Wentz were to go down. So they're very high on him. I mean, he just looks like a prototypical NFL quarterback, right? I mean, 6'5", 240. He's got a laser of an arm. He can make every throw, but it's all about right now just putting it all together with his footwork, you know, pocket presence, mentally mastering the playbook and the game at this level. But I think he's got staying power. I think he's going to be a guy in this league that has a really good future. And the Colts are glad they drafted him where they did in the fourth round a couple of years ago. And they're pretty high on his development, and it's only going to go up from here.
Well, Matt, I'm going to be calling the game with Steve Rabel on the radio, and I just want to thank you for doing a lot of my homework during this interview. I'm probably have to spend like a, you know, an hour less, but yeah, it's great stuff. Yeah, it looks Indy looks tough, boy. I'll tell you, it's, you know, we're talking about going on the road. We don't get to travel as far as the radio team goes, but just a good solid team. You know, more you break it down, you know, the big question marks Carson Wentz, but you look at offensive line, got a good running back, some great defenders. So hopefully you all have a good season other than, you know, Sunday, man.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I can't wait. And it's a shame that you guys aren't coming. And I totally understand. I'm not sure what boat we're going to be in as far as traveling this year to road games. I mean, it's still, we're still dealing with all this COVID stuff. But I'm telling you, people around here are fired up. It may not be as loud as the stadium out in Seattle, but it's going to be pretty loud in Indianapolis. It's supposed to be hot outside, so they might have the roof closed to keep all that noise in. It's going to be a raucous environment, and I'm just excited to be back to football. And I know people around here are chomping at the bit because they had a year off last year. Expectations surrounding this team are pretty high. And people are going to be going bonkers inside Lucas Oil Stadium.
Should be a lot of fun. Matt, thanks so much for taking the time. Enjoy the game this weekend, and best of luck throughout the season.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. Good luck. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
There you go. Matt Taylor, the radio play-by-play man for those Indianapolis Colts, giving us a look at that team for the matchup coming up this weekend. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll explaining exactly where he was when his philosophy on preseason changed. We'll let you hear what he had to say as we continue live from T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got a marching band out here, Dave. We got something going on. I see a lot of horns.
Oh, no. The band is on the field.
Yeah, that hurts.
That hurts less for you.
Yeah, it does. Make a tackle. Oh, sorry, this is baseball. But I think Shannon Dreher, who's down there, is going to grab her trumpet and join up. You know, she's a trumpet player in the Husky band.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. She's going to march along. I see a couple of tuba players, and I see a trombone and a clarinet. Yeah, we'll see what kind of treat we've got in store for us as they're gathering behind home plate right now. But we continue live from T-Mobile Park. This is not happening in the 710 studios. This is behind home plate at T-Mobile Park, where we are sitting up in the radio booth as the roof is closing right now, Dave. Very slowly.
You led everyone astray.
I did. I've made no official statement on the roof yet.
Well,
nothing official has been.
I think your reputation has been damaged.
All I'm saying is I've checked with my sources, and there's still no rain in the forecast. But the skies tell a different story.
Maybe they open it back up?
Maybe.
What do you think it costs to close it, like energy-wise?
I don't know. That's a good question. It moves. I think they said it takes 12 to 15 minutes, I think, to fully open or close this thing.
If you had looked out at your like electric meter, those little arrows would just be going.
The thing would just be spinning in a circle rapidly. Yeah, it's they're closing it for the time being. I'm not sure what's going on, but we'll see what happens with that. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll doing a weekly conversation did it with you last season and said, you know what, I think I'm done talking to Dave. Let's get Rabel in here.
Get the professional.
Let's get a guy in here who knows of football, what he's talking about, and that's Steve Rabel. So the coach talked with Rabes about a few different things, but cut number 7, here he is talking about when he realized preseason and the way players had sort of approached preseason and everything was changing.
And I think the first indication I ever noticed it was at the Pro Bowl when guys weren't willing to tackle in the Pro Bowl anymore, and they didn't want to compete the way they had in years past, and they took care of themselves more so and tried to avoid, you know, the contact and the collision. So that, I mean, which was a decision that everybody kind of collectively made. But I think things have been different since then. I don't know when that first happened, but just the mentality has shifted some. And you're right, it isn't the same. And it's not necessarily wrong or bad or any of that. It's just different.
When did they tackle in the Pro Bowl? I'm trying to remember when that was happening.
Well, the first time I noticed when they didn't, or when I thought it was a thing, there was a journeyman linebacker from the Bills. I'll have to look him up later. But he finally made the Pro Bowl in, like, his 10th year, and he dared to hit Jimmy Graham hard. And Jimmy Graham got up and threw the ball down at him and stomped off and was a baby about it.
I feel like even before Jimmy Graham, like long ago, you didn't really tackle. Like yeah. there was no real commitment. I mean, they did sort of.
Guys weren't just blowing each other up. But I mean, it used to look pretty similar. Like when I played, it looked like a football game. It doesn't even look like a football game. There's not even a point of doing it anymore.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's such a waste of time. There's hardly anybody in the stands in that game. It just
and I hate it and everything, but like, why in the world would you? If you're Bobby, I mean, people at the Pro Bowl are going to be highly paid.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I remember for a while there, it was like some of the game checks for these guys was, you know, it's around $1 million. I think the winner gets 250 and the loser gets 200 or something like that. Or it used to be 2 and 1 or something. So, I mean, it's just not worth it. It's a totally meaningless game. It's there just for, you know, it's like an awards ceremony more than anything. So, I mean, comparing it to that, I guess. But, I mean, the one thing is, you got to start physical, you know, and that was the thing. I think my criticism of last year, the slow start for the Seahawks defense had to do with lack of physicality. And a lot of it disappeared when Marquise Blair got hurt.
You know, somebody on the text asked a good question because you were one of the few people that were able to go to practice last year. We didn't go like we normally do. It was a really weird year and, you know, very limited media, but you were out there. Did you see any inkling that the defense was going to look anything like they did, or did it look like, hey, they look pretty crisp, they look pretty sharp, things look good? I mean, did that add up to you at all, or how did you view what you saw in practice versus what we saw the first half of the season, which was atrocious?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that played the most true and that stood out the most is that Jamal Adams was really good. I mean, because he was flying around, and I'm like, if you didn't know who that guy was, number 33 made every play. Marquise Blair was I don't want to say close second, but he was second. But, you know, as far as the physicality goes, no, I didn't think that that was going to be that big of a problem. And that's a problem that I thought that they had last year. It wasn't, I mean, they had some blown assignments and things like that, but the physicality never really came back. It was like they were practicing a lot of times, you know, for some guys. So that's something that they need to, you know, hit the ground running. And I've always thought, you know, in the preseason that you need to have a few big hits. And I remember Jesse Sapolo blew me up in the preseason on a screen. It was probably the hardest hit I took the entire year. It was in a preseason game. I mean, that used to happen. I think it's useful. I do. So,
Practice look different this year compared to last year?
Not really. But, you know, I just think that realization that, like, what's the problem? To me, the problem with the defense, there's the band.
The band's going, Dave. Yeah. I'm sorry. What'd you say? Hey, look, there's the dog.
You got dogs?
Right behind you. Look at that.
Hey. Hi, buddy. What's going on?
King County Sheriff dog coming through. Love it. Love it.
He's sniffing for weed. He sniffed your bag.
I was wondering why you jumped up on the table.
He sniffed your bag for a really long time. What were we talking about before the band? And, you know, we got bands. We got dogs.
We got dogs. We got bands.
Bob's got weed in his bag, apparently.
It's legal. I think I'd be fine.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, I mean, I to me, that was the biggest problem. No, to answer the question, the texter, I saw that earlier. I was like, yeah, there was nothing I saw that made it look like, again,
in store for a problem.
Yeah, I really thought that Marquise Blair going down, that was a big deal. He's a really good player, and I think he brings an attitude to this defense. So hopefully he can stay healthy. But, yeah, that was the big problem. Not physical enough.
Couple other things from Pete Carroll in his conversation with Steve Rabel, cut number 8. Just him taking a look at that Colts team, feeling like that is a well-balanced group that does not give up the football.
Well, they're a really, really well-balanced football team. They won 11 games last year because they had their act together. They really took care of the football. They're, you know, plus 10 turnover team for the year, which is a remarkable number to get to. They play really good defense, the number 2 rush defense in the NFL. They just don't give you much, and they have a terrific running game. They have a two-headed monster in the running game. This is a very well-balanced football team.
Well,
What did you think of what Matt said when we asked him about, hey, you know, out here we're talking about different groups, and, hey, we love our safeties, but we got questions about the cornerbacks? And he said, yeah, really no questions about anybody, any position group here. You feel like maybe depth, but they don't have any weaknesses.
I think he's the team play-by-play guy. and I'm not saying, you know, he's wrong or anything. I just think you probably err on that side of it. You know, I think Steve Rabel would say, yeah, there's some question marks there, but I really like Trey Flowers and I really like DJ Reed just like I do. Because I do. I do like those guys. And maybe, you know, I'm not objective when it comes to that. I think I am. I think people overreact when it comes to corners. But, you know, it's funny, though, listening to Pete and then you start talking about the offensive line and how, and he's saying, oh, this Ryan Kelly kid out of Alabama, he was a first-round draft choice in 2016. That's their center. And then Quentin Nelson was drafted in the first round in 18. You talk about Eric Fisher, Mark Glowinski. I mean, this is a pretty good offensive line. They got a good running game, as Pete just said. So it's just kind of funny how the closer you get, you know, we hear this general noise about Carson Wentz and his foot in the 5 to 12 week deal. Same thing with Quentin Nelson. And then all of a sudden you get towards game day and you go, everybody's good. This team was 11-5 last year. So, and, you know,
playoff team, the wild card team.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be tough to move their defensive line. Darius Leonard, man, I got to tell you, you got to look at him. You got to go watch this guy play. He's unbelievable. So, yeah, this, you know, the closer it gets, as always, the tougher it looks.
All right, coming up, is Cam Newton just too popular for his own good, or will he make us say, why, man? It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob, live from T-Mobile Park on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We do it every week, and we find the gems out there, of which there are many, many contributors to Why Man each and every week. A lot of the time, it's Colin Cowherd, because he's just an endless, just a wellspring of information and material. He's great for this segment. But this, we got a couple of new contenders today. Number one, now we had talked to Clayton about this because Cam Newton had been saying, hey, I'm going to get some things off my chest on Friday. I'm going to get some things off my chest. Well, cut number one is one of the things he got off his chest, talking about one of the reasons, in his opinion, that the Patriots did not want him backing up Mac Jones.
The reason why they released me is because indirectly, I was going to be a distraction. Without being a starter.
Yeah.
And this was
but
not
how?
Gonna come.
No. Verbally or in the locker room?
Just my aura.
Okay.
Just my aura. And that's just, and I told you this off camera, that's my gift and my curse.
Yeah.
When you bring a Cam Newton to your facility, when you bring a Cam Newton to your franchise, people are interested by mere fact.
They are intrigued.
Who is he? Yeah. Why does he wear his hair? Yeah. Why does he talk? Why does he act? Why does he perform? Why does all these questions?
Yeah.
Oh, he's taking third person.
Hold on. Who was that? Who was that? What? Whose voice was that?
That was saying that?
You know what's funny is my nephew Mikey just texted this to me. And then I was like, oh, look at this. And then Lefko had it in.
Yeah.
So the Y man really should be me because I didn't look up the Twitter thing. But
you didn't look at our show sheet.
But, you know, Bob, that's the kind of distraction that I bring to this show. Okay.
Yeah.
It's my aura.
Your aura.
You know, that's what you get when Dave. I can't even say.
How do you talk like that with a straight face? Who says things?
Oh, my God.
Unless you're being funny or ironic. Who talks like that?
Well, and the guy that's the sycophant there that's, you know, urging him on, it's like, yeah, that's right, and that's who you are, right? And that's what you're all about. Like, I would
get Cam Newton. Wouldn't
you be going, Bob, you'd be looking at him like, you would be texting him throw-up emojis.
I'd probably look. We don't talk like that here. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I can't go third person. I'm losing track of all the people. Stop that.
Yeah, it's one just, too many people.
But I think to his original point, there could be some truth, not to his aura, but maybe it could be distracting to have somebody that's that notable as a backup. The second the rookie struggles, is Cam coming in? He's a proven commodity in this league. He does have a different profile than any other backup quarterback in this league. That much is true. Is it a distraction? Could it be intimidating for a rookie quarterback to feel like, hey, I got to former MVP, Super Bowl quarterback, Super Bowl participant.
Who can't throw.
Well, but still, he's a well-known entity in this league. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate and say maybe there's some sliver of truth to it being a distraction for a young quarterback who has yet to step onto a field in earnest. But
what he's saying isn't the why man part of it. It's how he's saying it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're him, you're going, well, maybe they thought I would be a distraction.
Yeah.
I don't know. And also, you can kind of control whether or not you're a distraction.
But can't control your aura, Dave.
But, yeah, I was going to say, his is apparently out of control. And so
it's my aura.
Nobody can account for it. Yeah. I was saying last year that I liked when Cam Newton actually got along with Bill Belichick and they said nice things about each other. And, you know, and I thought, well, maybe I've been judging him not the proper way. You know, the thing I still, Clayton talked about this the other day, that when we'd go to Carolina and he'd be down there on the sidelines and he would see things were going poorly and Cam Newton.
Not a good leader.
Out comes the Gatorade towel.
Yeah.
Over the head, sulking over at the end of the bench. And, you know, that was the biggest problem. But I was kind of coming around on him because he really, in the game against the Seahawks, which was tragic for the Seahawks defense, he had a really, what did he throw for, like almost 300 yards or something?
Yeah, but everybody was doing that against the Seahawks defense.
But, yeah, and I was kind of coming around on him, but that's really weird. And whoever was interviewing him there, you should call him on it. Like, stop talking about
it. It's his aura. You got to watch out for his aura. It can overtake an entire room. It can provide a lot of pressure.
I like about this story is that it brings to mind back that if I want to get under Bob's skin, I can just start referring to myself as Dave. Dave liked that story.
In all honesty, is that not weird to hear somebody speak that way? And do it very comfortably, by the way.
Yeah.
Not trying to be funny or ironic or anything. It's like that's just how they speak.
Dave thinks it's weird.
All right, number two. A guy I've known for a long time who's said some things that have gotten under the skin of Seattle fans more than a few times, especially as it pertains to Russell Wilson. This is Marcellus Wiley, and we had responded to this cut before, but for those of you that hadn't heard this, he's talking about two quarterbacks that were in the news in the offseason for the wrong reasons, you know, being disgruntled, being unhappy on some level, and that'd be Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. He feels like Russ has more pressure on him than Aaron Rodgers does because Russ, in his opinion, has this need to be liked.
I don't know what I'll do, but what I do understand about myself, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, is that there's no pressure on me. I'm great. I'm an MVP multiple times. I'm a Super Bowl champion, and I'm the reason we won a Super Bowl championship. Russell Wilson can't even say that. Yes, they won a championship, but was he the driving force? No. So this season, they both kicked up dust in the offseason. We get it. So that's why this is really a question. But if you ask me which body would I want to be in, would I want to be Aaron Rodgers coming off an MVP campaign who has the mental makeup he does, or be Russell Wilson who's affected by everything?
I couldn't disagree with him more. I think the more pressure sits on the shoulders of Aaron Rodgers because his saga went on for so long. It was much more absolute in that I don't like management. I don't want to play here. In fact, I'm actively telling other players, don't come here because I'm not going to be here. Russell said, yeah, I got hit this many times. I can't get hit that much. That's as far as that went. Now, his agent said some things about, well, we don't want to be traded, but we'll go to these. Okay, that's what his agent said. Aaron Rodgers was looked at as an absolute malcontent who has an issue with management and does not want to be there. And everybody's looking at this as his swan song, by the way, in Green Bay. This year, they're looking at that as this is his final year in a Packers uniform. So if he goes out there after all of this dust up, all of the drama that came with his offseason, and he lays an egg, I mean, there's going to be more scorn on him than Russell. Russell wasn't complaining about it. You know, I don't like John Schneider. I don't like management. I don't like this. Right. It was a simple statement about getting hit. You knew what he meant. But comparing the two, I think there are going to be more eyes on Rodgers, especially if he struggles.
Yeah, I feel like Rodgers definitely cares more about, I mean, I don't want to use too dramatic of a word, but, you know, Russell can be monomaniacal, right? Like, he's obsessed with winning, and he really wants to, you know, it's not like a mental illness or anything, but, like, he really wants to win, and he's serious about it, and he works every minute of every day and all that. So, you know, maybe that's a little extreme, but I don't think he cares that much about what people think. You know, Aaron Rodgers, to me, I don't know, a lot of his stuff seemed kind of staged. Like, remember there was the video of him in the back of his buddy's truck with a case of Bud Light. Then there's a video out there of him playing like the ukulele in Hawaii. And I'm like, what's your messaging here? What are you trying to do? Russell's putting out stuff about, you know, this guy caught this pass, or I'm working hard, or we're getting up early, that kind of stuff. He's obsessed with being great. But as far as personality goes, I feel like a Russ for, you know, for who he is and how much money he's worth and what he has and everything, like, he's to the point where he can pretty much eliminate any problem from his life with money, other than between people.
Right.
Like, you know, I hate unloading the dishwasher. You know that.
It's a grind.
It's a grind. You know, I could hire somebody to do that. You can hire somebody to take care of all these little things for you. And I feel like even though Russ is in that situation, he's handled it pretty well. I mean, he seems like a very normal guy, whereas Aaron Rodgers seems like it's gotten to him.
Yeah, it's just and back to the basic question of which body would you rather be in, or however Marcellus termed that, you know, that something about what Aaron's accomplished trumps what Russell's accomplished, so thus Russ has more pressure or something. I mean, they both won one Super Bowl. Russell went back to another. He hasn't won the MVP, but I don't know. I see more. There's less slack for Aaron Rodgers. I'll say that.
I feel
like there's less slack. If he has a bad game or he starts to screw up, people are going, wait a minute, they just went out and got this receiver that nobody wanted except for you. We brought back your old receiver. We're kowtowing to you. We readjusted your contract. They didn't do any of that for us. They got Gabe Jackson, which is something they were going to have to address the line anyway. Your potty was done. So that was a move that was going to be – that wasn't to appease Russ. It's not like if Russ never said a word, your potty would be here this year. No, that was a move that had to be made, and they made it.
Right.
So I feel like if you're just talking about who's under more pressure, who has less slack, to me it's not close, and it's Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers, MVP in 11-14 also.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that. But anyway, for what it's worth, and no, I didn't say that Russell is wearing a monocle.
A monocle? Is he Mr. Peanut? Does he have a cane and a top
That's
hat?
The Monopoly guy.
Yeah. All right. Don't forget, Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday, 6 to 10 a.m., including the Matt Hasselbeck Show on Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. So make sure you tune in for that. All right. We got the professor coming up next. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, now is the time to text those in to 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. He comes up next as we continue live from T-Mobile Park with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.